All right, so I have 16 points. They start with the letter Q. I'm just kidding. Actually, I love the mnemonic devices. Actually, they're great. I'm just not that cool, so. Probably not. I'm not even going to try. So they were accurate in the sense that I frequently pray the prayer of Philippians 1 because it's the one I need. One of the things Clay used to say that actually was really helpful is he's, you know, in relation to briefings or whatever, he'd say, sing what you need. And that's been very helpful because I by no means feel like I do this super well. This is something that I'm just constantly going, Lord, help me do this. So I'm just going to start by reading the prayer. Most of us are probably familiar with it, but Philippians 1, 9 through 11. And this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and discernment, that you may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ the glory and praise of God. This prayer, I feel like, is timely. I feel like in the last just couple of years, this has been one that I felt was so significant to cling to, related to love abounding in discernment, in understanding, and fighting to keep heart free of offense and sincere and blameless. And it's only going to increase. I mean, we know that's what's coming. And the Lord is so clear that he has a bride that he's going to make prepared. And one of the indicators of his finished work in the bride is that she loves and that she'll be known by love. And that she'll be unified. And we see measures of that, but he's going to do it. He's going to complete it. It's going to happen. And that will be a sign of a trophy of his grace. That will be an indicator to the earth that there's something else, something supernatural happening. But simultaneously, we see the accuser released. We see betrayal. We see hatred toward one another, within and outside of the church, falling away. So there's this, you know, with the wheat and the tares maturing together, we're seeing that happen specifically in the context of love and the definition of what love actually is. So as I'm praying this, let your love abound. I mean, I obviously think of John 17, and I love the moment of John 17. Oh my goodness. John 17 being Jesus knows this is his conversation, his moment to talk to his disciples in a quiet place before everything hit the fan. And what he does in that moment, the affirmations of love. He knew what they were going to need. And so he prayed. He talks to them, and then he goes and says, I'm going to have a conversation with the Father now, and I'm actually going to do it out loud in front of you, because not because I need to do it out loud, but because you need to hear me talk to the Father about you. And then he goes into this prayer, and he's like, the same love you have for me, I have for them. The same love the Father has for the Son. And we know this, but like, what? The Father has for the Son, he has for us. And he even says, not even just the ones in this room, but the ones you're going to give me, meaning me. He includes every believer in the future in this moment going, you're in my mind right now. And then he finishes the prayer going, Father, put the same love in them too. That same love that we share, Father and Son, that I have shared to them, put that love back in them so that they actually have capacity to respond in love. So So in light of, you know, the next moments, Peter's like, we'll follow you to the end. And he's like, actually, you're not. You're going to run away. You're going to deny me. And he's like, what? And he goes, this is what you need to hang on to. Abide in my love. Abide, live in. Don't graduate from. Don't think you've got that part. So we're going to move to the next more interesting, like, theological point. He's going, this is the point. And so that's where I'm going, okay, God, that you've given us this. I need help. Help your love to abound. That's so much more than just exist or be. I mean, it's like abounding is like in a more than capacity. So we need the revelation of his love, but there's kind of three elements, and I kind of mentioned it already, but when I'm saying, Lord, let your love abound, there's like three parts to that, of the receiving the love, and then there's God's love for us, our love for Jesus, and then from that is the overflow into the second commandment, loving one another. So when I'm praying that, I'm kind of picturing those three elements of like, we only love because he loved us first. So we need his love in order to be able to love him back. And then from there, we are able to see people differently. It shifts our emotions. It shifts our perspective. It changes our hope related to each other and related to his ability to produce unity in the bride. So, and then he goes on to say still more and more, which clearly he's talking about a process. One of the things I love about the leadership of the Lord and also hate about the leadership of the Lord is that he loves process. And he doesn't skip to the end. He didn't for himself. He didn't for any of the fathers in the faith. I mean, we see the journey. He's like, Joseph, I promise you're going to be king. He's like, just kidding. You're going to be a slave first. And then go from slavery into being in the dungeon. Like, it just keeps getting worse. And you're like, what? And I just can't imagine the conversations Joseph is having with the Lord going, I thought I had it bad at Potiphar's house. You know, like, and then I was just kind of clawing my way back up into the light in Potiphar's house. At least I was, you know, had some like movement in there. And he's like, and then I was falsely accused and thrown in the dungeon. Like, what are you doing? But the Lord is kind. It's actually kindness, because had he been put in that position next to Pharaoh at the beginning with the attitude he had as a child responding, you're going to all bow to me. This is great. You know, that would have been a bad scenario for him. Much less the earth. So he likes process. And so when we're saying, Lord, give us love more and more, he's like, okay, I will. I'm going to challenge this and let you wrestle through it. And I'm going to help you. I'm going to be with you wrestling through it. But it is a working out issue in our heart, because we don't naturally have love in us. We have capacity for love as image bearers, but it's not naturally there. We have the root of sin in us, and he's going, I'm going to work it out, but you've got to cooperate. You got to lean in. You got to ask. And a lot of it is so much comes down to the asking. It's the taking the time to go, I need help right now. I'm not doing it right. Yeah. So he works in process. He loves the process itself. And the Holy Spirit actually loves his job of helping us in the process. I always thought of him as despising that and going, I guess I'll put up with him a little longer, you know? And that's not his approach. Like, so often when I pause and I go, what are you thinking right now? He shocks me with his kindness. Unless we're indifferent, which is a different conversation and a different problem. If we are not reaching, there is a different conversation, and often in his kindness, he will come strongly. but again, it's still kindness. So he's rescuing. So I feel like a lot of this is learning to love his words, his thoughts, his ways, coming down to taking the time to pause, pay attention, even pay attention, what am I preoccupied with? And we talked about this last week, but one of the phrases Clay has used is what are you preoccupied with? It tells you a lot about the posture and the attitude of your heart, because you've got to work through difficult circumstances and be, you know, we're not saying ignore and pretend like nothing ever happens. You've got to process through those things, but how am I thinking about it in the longevity, in the throughout the day? Am I still replaying that one phrase that's making me mad? Or am I having that Brother Lawrence turning the monologue of my mind into dialogue with the Lord? There's an opportunity. And one of the things the Lord told me years ago, and I'm not always successful, but he said, you're not allowed to have conversations in your head with other people anymore, because they were not fair. I was one-sided. It was only my side. And I put on phrases that they never would have said. Like, there are things that change in your mind. And the Lord's like, you need to process. That's not something that you can't do. He's like, but have that conversation with me instead. And that's challenging. And it feels awkward. You're like, but I can't say to you the things that I want to say to that person, you know, like, that's exposing my heart right now, and you're watching, and of course he's watching anyway, but when I'm talking to him, it's like really obvious, you know, so, but taking the time, especially when I'm frustrated, or anxious, anxiety for me, anger and fear are so connected. My mom pointed out to me years ago, I was like, I'm so mad my kid had done something very dangerous and it scared me. And I was so angry. And I was like, I don't know why. I'm like shaking. I'm so angry. And she's like, it's because you're afraid. It's actually fear. And I was like, oh. So coming to the root of the situation, a lot of times my anger is actually anxiety and fear. Doesn't make it any better. It shifts like the conversation related to how to manage that moment. But how often the difference of when I pause for 2 seconds and go, Holy Spirit, what are you saying right now? Help me bite my tongue. And then going, what is your solution? Because I don't see anything. And the moments, like, he'll give the littlest little ideas. And it's like, whew, it opens up. And like, I'll see it with my kids. I'm like, Lord, I need those teachable moments for my kids, because I can talk to them blue in the face and it doesn't matter. Unless they're actually in a moment to receive it, it just bounces off. And maybe my attitude and my delivery is part of the problem. But but those moments when he'll just open that door and I see it, and it's like I can say things and it goes right to the core of who they are. I can't produce that, but he's really good at producing that. So what am I preoccupied? Am I taking the time to pause and actually talk to him about it? Or am I just saying words, trying to cover my bases, but I'm not thinking about the person I'm talking to? Because that's actually more like superstition than it is prayer.
Ouch.
Yeah. That's a painful one, and I have to constantly come back to it, going, am I talking to you right now? Or am I just doing the motions and praying the prayers so that everything's covered and we're good? And he's like, you're not talking to me as a father who actually is listening and wants to help. So it's a constant realigning, adjusting. And again, that starts to shift and affect the filters, so that the way I see my child in that moment begins to shift, or my husband, or my coworker, or the president of the United States. I need him to shift my attitude and my perspective about politics, about social injustice, about everything that is beginning to like steal my emotional energy and my thought life, going, I need to realign right now and get his thoughts. Because if I'm just stewing about these things but not talking to him who can actually do something about it, it's going to be empty, and it's a waste of my time, and it puts me in a posture to be reactive to other people then, because I'm not settled here. So in knowledge, it takes God's eyes to see budding virtues as he directs our hearts into the love of God and the patience of Christ. I'm so glad he's patient. I see it over and over again in his patience in relation to me, in that he is just so gentle and consistent, frustratingly consistent sometimes in his pursuit over my heart in an issue or a relationship or an offense or whatever. He is consistently patient. Yes. And we see that in the way he endured suffering for my sake, for the joy set before him. So he's not asking us to do things that he didn't to the extreme walk out as a human in a human frame, knowing the human mind and emotions and sickness and body. I mean, he knew all of it. Sympathetic high priest is one of the most beautiful phrases, because he knows what it is. It's not like it's easy to accuse him of going, you don't understand. And he's like, actually I do. I really, really do. So it takes God's eyes to see the budding virtues, and then to exercise his faith and his patience with others. I need the Lord to renew my mind. I need him to actually wash my mind. I think of Jacob. I've been reading the story of Jacob again. I love Jacob. I love Jacob because he's so human. He is so painfully, like, he's just a weasel. But his story is so, but he's tenacious in his pursuit of the Lord. And he goes, I'll wrestle you. Like, the things that I'm like, I don't know that I would have done that. But he does. And over again, he's the one that's in the wrong. And he's hiding. And he's running for his life because of the things he did, his choices that led to this moment. And he goes, Abba, help me, meet me here. And he does. Like, we see the hand of the Lord over and over and over again in Jacob's story. And again, I'm just like, you are patient. You are so patient. Even almost offensively patient. I mean, I was reading about Ahab the other day. Jezebel and Ahab, the wife, Jezebel, who's a wicked woman. Ahab's who's working with her. The end of his life, they're about to, like, Israel's surrounded. They're all going to die. They're all, and he's standing on the wall, like, mourning. And he, like, secretly puts on sackcloth and ashes under the kingly robes so that the people wouldn't know. But he's actually in mourning, crying out to God secretly. And God hears him and actually says, you're going to live. I'm going to take care of you. And I'm like, what? It's Ahab. Like, what are you doing? He didn't even do it publicly. It was like this. Anyway, I'm astounded constantly of his patience and his mercy. And I need him to help me love that too. When it comes to the person that I'm frustrated with or who has actually harmed me, I need him to help me see them differently because my perspective is incomplete. Who is a God like you pardoning iniquity because he delights in mercy? Micah 7:18. That passage has really convicted me, really, because I don't delight in showing mercy. I'll acquiesce to showing mercy. I'll go, if I have to, I'll try, you know, but he loves it. Like, it delights his heart to show mercy. And that's where I see I'm not like him yet. So that you may approve the things that are excellent. The next phrase down. I want to love and rejoice in his excellent ways. They're contrary to the way that I would do things. I feel like, and you just read the Beatitudes, and they're not the way that I would normally want to respond. just say it that way. But his ways are excellent, and I don't want to be found. I want to be found rejoicing in them and not opposing him in them. And I find often when I'm resisting his ways, whether it be forgiveness or patience, it comes down to trust. It's an issue. I keep finding myself, why am I having a hard time forgiving this person? Why am I having a hard time not defending, like wanting to defend myself and to, for justice, you know, do the raw. There's a moment for, I'm not saying there's not moments to speak up, but I'm saying for myself, like when I'm trying to make justice for myself, and he's like, that's not my way right now. When I'm resisting him in those things, it really comes down to, do I really trust that he's for me and that his ways actually work? Because it feels like if I don't stand up for this thing right now and defend it and make it known, then I'll just be trampled by everyone, and he won't. And he's going, no, I'm going to defend you. Let me be your defense. Let me be your restoration. Let me be your covering as you lay down your reputation in the moment. So that the conversation keeps in the last year has kept coming back to trust. It's like, do you really, really believe I am who that I say that I am? And that I will care for you the way that I say I will care for you, whether that's in this age or the next. Maybe it's delayed, but it will happen. It's an issue of surrender. But within that, his evaluation of greatness, we've talked about it, but is shocking. I really do believe that we're going to be amazed at the people he calls great in the age to come. I think, you know, great ones are going to be like the Teresa Baldwins, cultivating a steady, burning heart at home, caring for special needs kids, fighting to maintain a posture of love for the Lord when no one's seeing it, and daily making decisions. Those moments stand forever as a fragrance. Those are gifts we can give on this side that we can't give in the age to come. So the prayer I'm praying is, Lord, help me see what you see and agree with your definition of greatness when it comes to those around me. And to call it out in each other and actually, you know, mourn with those who mourn, but rejoice with those who rejoice and celebrate their victories as much as their mourning moments. It's almost harder sometimes when they're getting favor or they're getting whatever to go, I'm so excited for you, especially when I was the one that was not seen. Like, I need his heart. I need his perspective of greatness, because it's the constant, the spirit of the age is so like subtle, and it's the way it has shifted the way that I think. And I feel like I'm constantly running into it going, that's not the way he works. But it doesn't make sense to me. Isn't influence the most important, you know, expression of greatness? And he's like, no, it's really not. It can be. Like, the Lord can use that. That we would be sincere and without offense. I love this part of the prayer. Because it's the part I need. Follow through, wanting to be sincere on the inside where no one sees. I think that, especially in light of being in ministry contexts, but really anywhere, the battle to keep a sincere heart and not go through the motions is so huge. And we see in the Old Testament where the priests were serving, going through the motions, and the presence left the tabernacle and they didn't even know. And so that makes me tremble because my dad was a pastor, was in and around the ministry my whole life. It's so easy to know the right answers and the right phrases and not actually have a heart that's responding to them. And so in my prayer, I'm going, Lord, I want to be sincere, whether I'm talking to my kids for the 20th time about the same thing, or I'm on a microphone in the prayer room. Like, I need my heart to be sincere before the Lord, because both those contexts are valuable and they both matter. And there's a way to give him my love when I'm doing the dishes, and there's a way to give him my love when I'm in front of other people, and they both matter, and I want to be the same in both contexts. So sincere, but it's about the follow through. Like, I know the things, but am I able to actually continue in them? That's where it gets tricky. And then without offense, being blameless. This is the way to a free heart. His kindness commands us to fight offense for our own sake. It's actually less for him or the person we're forgiving, because they don't even know or care most of the time, quite honestly. It's about me. It's about my heart being free, because I am locked in with whatever that offense might be. And he's going, you want to be free. You want to have a heart that's alive and thriving, not shut down in bitterness. And that actually affects your physical body as well. Filled with the fruits of righteousness, a gift and a partnership. Little by little, the fragrance of Jesus rubs off and transforms us as we cooperate with his leadership, as we go with him and find our way up the mountain of myrrh and the hill of frankincense. Fruits are grown. They are with a mature plant. As James 1 talks about, the endurance producing, being perfected, lacking nothing. It takes time. It takes consistency. That's the hard part. His commands are motivated by love. We see it over and over again. You know, he gives the Ten Commandments because we don't know what love is. We're like, how do we love? And he's like, well, here's Ten Commandments. Let me show you. Don't kill anyone. You know, like, don't murder. Don't lie. Don't all the things. And then we're like, well, okay, we can do that. And then loophole later, he goes, I'm going to help you out here. We're going to give you the law, because you're not understanding the Ten Commandments. So he extends it further. And then loophole later, Jesus comes in and he goes, well, actually, when you think about those things, you have participated in them. So it's even further. But his commandments, the thing about them, we see them, you know, Psalm 2, like, cast off the shackles. We don't like it. It feels like bondage. And he's like, no, you're misinterpreting the whole thing. I am showing you the way to a free heart, full of love and capacity to experience joy. Actually, this is the way to joy. His commandments are motivated by love, so our obedience also must be motivated by love to be successful. And that's where he's saying, you know, in John 14 through 17, he's talking about, if we love him, we'll keep his commandments, because it's a gift. It's an overflow of desire. And love, you know, the phrase, lovers always outwork workers. It's really true. When I feel clean, I act clean. And so the more I have my eyes locked in on the love of God for me, the more I love him in return. And so it's both. It's receiving, and then it's going, I don't want to do anything that would put distance between us. I want to be close to you. I want that living flame of love burning in me, even when it doesn't feel so good sometimes. But I don't want to do anything to lessen that, because that's where I find you and I need you. So his commandments are not burdensome. 1 John 5:3. Yeah, his commandments are the way to the free, contented, rejoicing heart, and it's his kindness to us that he gives them to us. The accuser is constantly pulling us away from this posture of love. The accuser accuses God's leadership, and he accuses us, and then he accuses other people. And I don't want to sidle up to him. I don't want to help him in his job. And too often I find myself there going, I am in my mind. And maybe I'm not saying it because I'm too whatever. But in my mind, I'm saying these phrases and I'm going, that was not God. That was the accuser. Like, Lord, forgive me. Help me say what is true. What is lovely? Hoping all things, believing all things, enduring all things. And I mentioned a dream a couple of weeks ago about that, of the significance of what happens when we lose perspective of who the real enemy is, and we start to see one another as the enemy, and it's not them. There is an accuser who is our real enemy, and I want to keep my eyes fixed on who the enemy is and who my helper is related to him. And I don't want to agree with his subtle ways of partiality either. That's another one that I feel is so subtle in the way that I accept or receive people for friendship, for communication, for proximity. It's so subtle. I would never like outright do things because you're like, no, that's bad, you know? But it's the subtle ways that I might spend my time more with one individual than another simply because one is more desirable than another. And I'm wanting the Lord to help. Similarly, that is also a measure of the accuser having way in my heart. So I need the Lord to give me his divine narrative about other people, about me, and about his plan. So fighting for the thoughts of God, taking time to ask, realign, leaning not on my own understanding. Until the day of Christ. Last phrase, that I will be. To find offense, I find initially when difficult moments happen, I usually do pretty good initially. Because I got the things and I'm like, yeah, I'm in the fight. We're going to do this, you know? Like, I'm gonna overcome and I'm going to do this right. I'm going to bless them. I'm going to whatever. And I do pretty good, honestly, usually in the initial moment, I do fairly well. The issue is give it 6 months down the road. I'm usually a little tired by then of fighting for it in my mind and my emotions, and the narrative begins to skew. I have to watch what's replaying in my mind, and I don't want to let the enemy play telephone with the facts and God's purposes and his heart related to the circumstance. I find that really I have to watch 6 months, a year and a half, 2 years down the road is where I find there's been a root of bitterness that I don't know when it happened. Where initially I was like, I'm doing great. I got this. And maybe that's the problem. I don't know. But but really, I mean, I really do. Initially, I think I'm just finding the pattern for me, and maybe it's not for everyone, but for me, the pattern is usually I am in the fight at the beginning. I'm aware, I'm attentive, I'm looking for those foxes, I'm looking for those moments, those thought processes, and I'm shooting them down because I'm like, I don't want this, I don't want to go there. But when I'm tired, And it feels like it just keeps going on and on and on and on. That's where I find my heart losing its way and my thought life losing its way. So when I love that it ends, you know, it says until the day of Christ, going, it's about longevity. You know, I have a vision for bright eyes and a burning heart. Sitting in my rocking chair on the front porch, you know, as an old person. I want that, but that's so rare in the earth to have bright eyes and a burning heart as an old person. And when you see it, you just want to be around them. Like when we all know, like that one person who's Donna Edwards and Robert, you just want to be around them because they have bright eyes and a burning heart. Yes. And it's a sign and a wonder that they have not lost their way, specifically in the issue of bitterness. Bitterness, anxiety, and anger. But it's only possible with his love, his words, his thoughts, his ways, realigning me over and over and over and over again, 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road, 20 years down the road. It's his kindness and his gentleness that'll make me great as I learn to lean. And then the last phrase, to the glory and praise of God, it is a trophy of his grace. When this is an overcoming, the prayer is active in our hearts, we see it really is a trophy of his grace, and it's a sign and a wonder to this generation. So I have no idea how much time I just took. It's a long time. Maybe. Okay. Should I pray? While she's coming up, I'm just going to read this poem because I want to. Living Flame of Love, a lot of you are probably, it's a very famous poem, but this gets me every time. I hope I can read it without losing it. O living flame of love that tenderly wounds my soul in its deepest center, since now you are not oppressive, now consummate. If it be your will, tear through the veil of this sweet encounter. O sweet cautery, delightful wound, O gentle hand, O delicate touch that tastes of eternal life and pays every debt. In killing you change death to life. O lamps of fire in whose splendors the deep caverns of feeling, once obscure and blind, now give forth so rarely, so exquisitely, both warmth and light to their beloved. How gently and lovingly you wake in my heart, where in secret you dwell alone, and in your sweet breathing filled with good and glory, how tenderly you swell my heart with love. Abba, thank you for these precious ones. God, I thank you that they hold your affections, they have your eye. And I'm asking that we would abound in love, God, that you would enlarge our capacity for love in the receiving and in the giving. Abba, we are so limited in our understanding, but together with all the saints, God, I'm asking, would you help us to embrace a living understanding of the depths of your love? Your love that's clean, it's complete, without mistakes or grumpiness. God, I thank you that your love is free of assumption, that you're not preoccupied or distracted in your love, God, that your love delights and enjoys in extending extravagant mercy. Your love that is patient and kind. It hopes all things, believes all things. It endures all things. Thank you for your love that will fight for our fullness, even if that means you're fighting us, God. I ask you to help us enlarge our hearts to love in return. Help us not to move from you when it gets uncomfortable, God. Help us to trust your love as it burns deeper, God, that you would help us to be attentive to your thoughts about you, about ourselves, about others, that you would align us, that we would see budding virtues and exercise patience and hope, that you who have thoughts to share would help us take the time to absorb your perspective, to lean into and love your excellent ways, fighting for free hearts unoffended, that we would be sincere, that we would be blameless as children of our Father. I'm asking for grace in the follow through to staying steady. You who make all things beautiful in your time, I'm asking for grace to love what you love, to hate what you hate, that we would be trophies of your grace. In Jesus' name, amen.